Been some stuff about Will Schofield on the program earlier on, comparing, well, sooking was one word that was thrown up. Port Adelaide players that are complaining about their lot and the Victorian bias yesterday and the day before. And Will Schofield from the West Coast Eagles happy to accept that it can never be 100% even the AFL because of 10 teams being based in Victoria. So if you choose to play in Perth, you get what you get, and you like it, and you accept that. If you didn't hear Will Schofield on the program earlier saying that they're big boys and they're good enough to handle it, and they did, they won a flag, here's Will Schofield.
No, I wouldn't say perplexed. I would just say, probably as I said at the start, just try to keep rolling with it. You know, like you said, we do travel a lot, and, you know, we probably face a few different challenges than other teams, but that's the lay of the land for us. So it's probably a good thing. I think, you know, with the uncertainty, we probably do play with a fair bit of uncertainty regularly. And I think it's probably been a strength of our team, specifically in the last couple of years, is playing through those times where we might lose players through injury or different things with scheduling or anything like that. So I'd like to think that no matter what happens, we can put up with it. And yeah, you know, I hear a lot of chat about the Victorian based, you know, metrics, but it is what it is. It's fine. We're all big boys. We can handle it.
Will Schofield on the program earlier. Don't forget, you can download the podcast anytime you'd like. Sean Higgins has been good enough to join me for Australian Made. Shop for authentic Aussie products. Choose Australian Made. Welcome to you, Sean. Great to have you on the program again.
Thanks for having me again, Dwayne. Looking forward to it.
So Will Schofield said that. It's interesting because every team could look at it and say, okay, well, you know, this is against us. You've got to travel down to Tassie for a few games in Hobart. You've also got the situation where North Melbourne doesn't get as many of the blockbuster games as some of the other bigger Melbourne-based clubs. So every club's got their own hurdles in front of it that some clubs, well, some players would look at as being slightly unfair, but other players would look at and say, okay, well, that's just what we have to accept and we've got to get on with it.
Yeah, you're right. And at the end of the day, it's been like that for a long time and we've all adapted pretty well. So in our experience, we worry about what we can control and get ready for playing whenever that would be and wherever that is. And I think the best teams over a long period of time have always adapted that mindset and been able to deliver when it counts. And not always fair, but I guess that's the lay of the land. And at the end of the day, mate, we're all excited about getting football back. So wherever we'll play, I'm happy to go.
It does look like almost certain now that the AFL's kind of future game style planning is based around creating this faster, slicker, more ballistic game. Chris Scott spoke earlier on Jared Waitley's program about the fact that they've been planning for it for a while. So they don't think after planning for it that it'd be a disaster if it changed all of a sudden. He's preparing for a whole season of the speed, and the idea of fatiguing players and reducing interchange to fix congestion sounds like it's dead. I'll play a little bit of Chris Scott, a package of what Chris Scott said earlier, including the idea of having a game of football where it can come down to the last 10 minutes or 5 minutes of a game and all your really good players are still fresh and are able to perform at their optimum level for a great climax of the game, similar to basketball. They were his words, not mine. Here are Chris Scott's words from earlier.
I think one of the risks that certainly I think about a fair bit is, you know, theorising and hypothesising around what the game might be like and what our response would be, only to find that you're mistaken and all the work you've done, you know, is not only a waste of time, but can be confusing for the players as well. I would liken it to a football team laying out their game style in November to all their players, only to get to the first or second pre-season game and work out that what you've been working on is not going to stack up in the regular season and then having to turn it on its head. That's a recipe for confusion amongst the players and, you know, lack of faith in, you know, the tactics that you're putting in place. So we've hastened slowly on that one. I suspect that the AFL might take the chance to, you know, have a look at how the competition would go with shorter breaks between games and, you know, even the opportunity longer term to play games, you know, across, you know, a week where you don't have too many double-ups. I mean, clearly in a compressed season, we're going to have games on at the same time. At certain times of the year, but all the things that would make recovery quicker without taking away from the spectacle, I think will be considered. And I mean, I for one, I like it when the game's intense, you know, when the powerful players are out there and they're fresh. I think that's when the game is at its best. I think when the players are really, really fatigued and, you know, the skills are down because they just can't cover the ground, I'm not sure that anyone looks to that style of game and says that's, you know, what we aspire to for the game. So yeah, I think there could be two things done at once. Have a look at what the future of the game might look like, but also give us a chance to get some games in quick succession this year. The shorter games does open up a whole lot of things. You know, it might well be back to, you know, the model. When I thought the game was actually pretty good of some years ago when there was lots of interchange and, you know, the players were really fresh and really dynamic. So I think the jury's well and truly out on whether that created more congestion in the game. But even then, I think if it did, there'd be some tweaks that could be made, you know, to make the game a bit more open and a bit faster. So all the things that lead to that around, you know, the way you need to adjust your playing style, the way the opposition would play. You know, even the fact that if the game was much shorter, you know, if you go to the extreme end of the spectrum, then game management at the end of games becomes really important as well. You know, probably the best example that I could point to is the way the first tier of basketball is played around the world. So often you get those close games because, the first three quarters is really sort of feeling each other out, you know, before the game really explodes in the last quarter. And, you know, it leads to some pretty interesting finishes. Whether we want to try to orchestrate that in our game is another question.
He threw it up. He didn't say, he threw it up as another question, Sean. What do you make of, you know, making sure that your good players are up and running at their optimum level late in games?
Yeah, it was a little bit to unpack in that. Some really good points and points that I would agree with. It is going to be interesting to see when and how the best players across the competition and in individual teams are used. And it was interesting to see it round one because shorter game time meant that you needed to stay in contact with the team. And also, it just felt like the urgency to score, particularly in our game, was up. And we found ourselves significantly behind at half time. So we had to put the foot on the pedal to come back in the second half. And we did that by rotating our good players on the ground rather than rotating them to the interchange, and if you went to the interchange, it was only quickly to come back on. So I definitely think if games are going to be tighter, and common sense says, logic says they probably will be if the games are shorter, then you're going to want your best players out on the ground. There's no question about that. And how you do that, well, I'm all for, and I may be wrong, I've never subscribed to the notion that less interchange would open the game up. And from a playing perspective and by experience out there, more interchange would make for a better spectacle. It would reduce fatigue. It would keep the ball moving quicker. So I definitely think shorter, quicker interchanges while having the flexibility to keep your star players on the ground in different positions is going to allow for a better game. And if that better game results in closer matches and stars of the competition impacting those matches at the end, well, I think that's for the greater good.
Yeah, it sounds like you agree with a lot of his points. He also said that he was talking about games essentially being four or five or six nights of the week because he was talking about not doubling up with games, so not having, you know, multiple games on a Saturday, actually allowing games to be spread and then having the option of playing games off five-day breaks. Do you see when footy comes back that we might have a situation where we get games just about every night of the week?
Well, from a viewer's point of view, I would love that. I think interesting to ask your point of view on that as well from calling them. But clearly, if we had high profile teams playing against each other on prime time slots, then it's going to be greater for the viewer and it's going to be greater for the broadcasters as well. And hopefully, a different avenue of keeping football at a premium. So, as players, I think we'll adapt to anything now, what we've gone through, and also know that football is not going to be exactly the same as what we knew, and also a great little refresh that why not play around with that and have Monday night footy and these prime spots on TV that will get some of the best television and the best teams playing. So, I mean, you calling it, do you see that as a positive and an advantage as well?
I'd see it as a positive to give people a slot. So if it's North Melbourne Fremantle on a Wednesday night or Port Adelaide and the Gold Coast on a Tuesday or Wednesday night, at least they're going to get a slot where they get seen. Everybody in the whole football world can decide whether to watch it or not, as opposed to, you know, hiding it amongst games on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, that's right. And also those Twilight Sunday games, we can sort of get lost a little bit because there's been six or seven games squeezed into a 48-hour period, and some maybe there's viewers and supporters that are over football by come Sunday afternoon. And if we can stretch that out and give options to the viewer to be able to watch it, then, you know, I'm all for that. And I don't think there's anything better than knowing that you're a standalone game at 7:30 or 7:50 of a night time, and you're going to get a big audience at the ground, but also a big audience watching as a player. You know, they're great games to play in. So if we can share that around and create more prime time slots, then it's something that we definitely should consider.
Yeah, and as a broadcaster or someone that's in the media, I see what happens. You have three games on a Sunday, say. North Melbourne win a thriller by a point, and yet Scott Pendlebury tears a hamstring in Collingwood's 10-goal win earlier in the day. So it's the tearing of the hamstring of Scott Pendlebury that becomes the big story because, you know, it's Pendlebury and it's Collingwood and it's a newspaper seller. So if you had games every night in the week, then the North Melbourne one-point win on a Wednesday night would be talked about for 24 hours. At least you'd get your time for people to talk about North, for people to talk about a Fremantle or a Port Adelaide or a Gold Coast situation rather than have it hidden amongst what happened at Collingwood and whether, you know, Richmond had Dustin Martin come off because he got a sore toe.
Yeah, I totally agree because there's always that the hype and creates a lot of noise and interest for, you know, Friday night games or even Saturday night games because of the build-up, the commentary and the coverage that's been able to be given to those teams, but also then the follow-up the next day without having sort of three, four, five games to talk about. So it's, yeah, it is. I tend to agree with that. The one thing that we wouldn't want to do is go to overkill where we're playing every night of the week and supporters are getting sick of it. But definitely there's scope for Thursday through to sort of Monday, Tuesday.
Talked to Andrew Gaze earlier on, talking about the Jordan documentary and the openness of having cameras in the locker room and letting the press come into the locker room straight after. We do have this more of a closed shop mentality, the secrecy of AFL behind the curtain, this us against them mentality where you keep the media and pretty much the public out from behind the curtain. Would you like to open it up a little bit more? There have been some like Patrick Dangerfield and yourself who are quite comfortable and would want it opened up, whereas you look at, you know, the Lance Franklins and Dustin Martins of the world who don't do a lot of press might not necessarily like it.
Yeah, so one thing that's really key to this from a player's point of view, I think, and, you know, personally, I'd be comfortable with it. But also, if we do that, then we've got to be open to accepting different personalities and allowing guys to voice their opinion and their thoughts on the game or issues without critiquing it as harshly as we do. So we can't have the noise around players aren't opening up and talking while at the same time knocking down anyone that speaks. So I think the whole mentality around that would need to shift and really be able to see the player as a person. And I think that's something that's great that's come out of these docos that are being produced at the moment, is you're getting to see the person behind just, you know, the great athlete that we see on the world stage, or for us as footballers, that there's actually a human behind that. So accepting that would be, you know, are we open to that? I'm not sure. I'd be curious to see if we are, but that would be something that would need to change for all players to feel comfortable to have 100% access.
Yeah, because it's a fine line. Being critiqued or commented on, like people like me, we do it, as opposed to ridiculed. And, you know, the extremist language that gets used sometimes to really whack a guy over the head with a bar, there's a difference between that kind of reporting, isn't there?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, healthy debate and conversation is fine, but you can understand why, you know, some guys, and it goes across a lot of different industries, that if you're going to say something and then you get whacked for it or ridiculed, then it's easier just to say, well, I won't do that again. But I think all fans now are wanting closer access. And I know clubs do it pretty well through their networking and PA through their channels as well, that you see the different side to guys. And I think on a majority, fans and the media are
really enjoying that. So hopefully we get to a stage through this that the awareness and the acceptance piece does open up to allow for better dialogue and an insight to players, clubs, coaches, whatever it is.
Chris Scott mentioned earlier, and I played in a game in Sydney from memory where we flew in on the day, played the game and flew out that same day. Chris Scott mentioned under the new fly-in, fly-out model, you might have a situation where if the weather's okay and we get a chartered flight, you do fly the short journey to Adelaide or to Sydney in the morning, play your game and fly out that night. Do you think players would cope? Would you be okay with it?
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't really given that too much thought. On those shorter flights, you know, even to Tassie if it was, or to Adelaide or Sydney, then I'm sure we'd find a way to adapt. I mean, some guys would potentially sit in the car longer than that anyway driving. So if it was a chartered flight and it was streamlined through the morning's process of getting on the plane and getting there, then we'd look at that. But if that's what needed to happen to play, then of course we'd look at it. It's definitely food for thought, though.
Yeah, and I presume that it's one of those things that you'd never think of, and then all of a sudden you realise, hang on, we could actually make this work. It might not be too bad. What are you like on the staying away from home and going through that whole process that gets a bit lengthy sometimes when you fly interstate to play games?
Yeah, some guys enjoy it. I actually quite like it. Some guys don't. Like, we've got plenty of guys that would prefer to streamline that, to fly in, either train, play and get out of there. I mean, been around, I've got a bit of a routine now when I go into state, so I'm happy with that. But, you know, maybe we do look back at situations like this where we start to fly in, play and fly out for the shorter trips, and then probably look back and go, geez, we're in that state or that city for a long period of time just to play a game when it's not that far away. So I think the whole world's learning different ways to do it, and maybe some travel situations and even the people we take is going to be in review as well.
I know you've got your Mindfulness in Sport podcast that happens on a weekly basis, and to some of these things that get thrown up to expand your mind. What's on the podcast this week, and when does your podcast drop every week?
Yeah, we dropped one last night. There'll be another one coming up in the next couple of days, just to follow on from the first part a couple of weeks ago that we spoke about the programming and the subconscious programming that takes place from when you're born through to the age of seven, and, you know, facing the pressure challenges and that, particularly for us as athletes. So to follow on from that, there's some great examples that I talk about in game situations that I used last year. And I think a lot of people will be able to relate to in dealing with, you know, the negative thoughts or doubts or judgments that creep in, and a few little tips and tools to handle those pressure situations. And I'm sure all of us, both on and off field, are going to experience them, particularly over the coming months. So hopefully it gives a lot of people a few different options and ideas and a few little tools, like I mentioned, to find a different way and to shift back into the excitement of getting the job done.
Great stuff, Sean. Always good to talk to you. Before I let you go, what's your current situation? Has every North Melbourne player been called back to training? When do you look like heading back to the club? Have you been given some guidelines?
No time guidelines on that yet, Dwayne. I'm sure conversations are being had today throughout the rest of this week. And, you know, fingers crossed things open up in the next couple of weeks. And we've got ourselves in a good position training either by yourself in a pair at the moment, getting the work done, and looking forward to getting back with smaller groups, hopefully in the coming weeks. But time will tell. Hopefully we get an answer come sort of Friday this week.
So every player's like every person in the public, hanging out for Friday to find actually what the government's saying, because then clubs can actually jump and make their own decisions based on that.
Yeah, so we've stepped it up a little bit in terms of training. I had a really big session today with another guy, and to be honest, feel like if we got the green light now, I'd be good to go. But we are standing by. I think all of us have sort of joined the dots a little bit and read between the lines that hopefully we're not too far away. And if that's the case, then I'm sure we're all excited to get back into it as players. Well, I know our team, we're ready to go. So a shortish lead in, getting back to the club, and we look forward to games beginning.
And were you only presented at that player meeting with the worst case scenario? Were you given other options, and were you perplexed why that was the only one presented?
No, look, at the time, players wanted to be kept up to date with what was on the table, and that was clearly outlined that that was worst case scenario, and went through, I guess, all options in terms of standard structure of the way that games are played to, you know, fly in, stay for a period of time, a hybrid model, or, you know, the worst case of 20 in 21 weeks, and the PA delivered that to us. They also, you know, from a club perspective, we had a chat yesterday, the PA were on the line again, and it's just forever changing. So, I mean, as players, we just want to be updated with the views of the AFL and where it all sits at the moment, but still knowing that things do change, you know, really quickly, even in terms of from the start of a conversation to the end of the conversation, that, you know, the time, whether it be government or AFL, that the message has shifted a little bit just because we are moving quickly. So it was put on the table last week. There was a little bit of hype after that, but that was clearly outlined as the worst case scenario. And the great thing about it, Dwayne, at the moment is it looks like, you know, that's almost in the past. It's going to be a hell of a lot better than that. And let's hope so if we continue to do the right things.
Absolutely, Sean. Let's hope plenty of people download your mindfulness podcast. Great to have a chat, Tim. We'll do it again next week. Thanks for your time.
Talk to you then, Dwayne. Thanks.